Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Three analytics pros and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 4. I'm Michael Helbling. I'm Director of Analytics at Search Discovery in Atlanta, Georgia. On the show today, we've got our other two hosts, which is Jim Kane. He's the double CEO of Napkin and Babbage Systems. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
And, of course, Tim Wilson, a partner at Web Analytics Demystified and all-around good guy.
Hey-ho, neighbor. Sounds like a good guy thing to say.
Yeah, no one's going to call me a good guy.
Yeah.
No respect.
No respect at all. So, guys, today we're tackling kind of an interesting topic. It's a little bit subjective, but it really has to do with something that's kind of really important in our industry, which is how an analyst decides whether to stay in the position they're at or to seek a new employer and go to the next job. You know, one of the things that is true about our industry is there's unprecedented career mobility. It's very easy to find a new position, to go find a new job, and to take a new position. And a lot of times that comes with an increase in pay and potentially an increase in title and responsibility. So what we're going to do today is we're going to try to break that down and look at that decision-making process a little bit. You know, one thing that can happen in a conversation like this is that some of the things we talk about could be perceived as generic, or any business person could kind of apply some of these principles. But we know this about web analytics and digital analytics is that the people in this space are very special. And I don't mean that in a, okay.
In a Jim Kane sort of way.
How am I always the douche? Why does this?
All right. So, you know, as we look out at that and look at web analytics professionals in the market today, we're a very unique bunch and we are, you know, pretty specialized. And as such, we have a sort of a unique set of considerations when thinking about how to approach this decision-making process. So first off, let's set the stage. Tim Wilson, get us kicked off and start talking about when that decision-making process starts ticking for someone, what are the kinds of things that are probably going on in their work environment and their job that might get somebody to that point? And then what are some positive and or negative indicators about how that decision-making process maybe should line up for someone?
I think you put that well, in that it's like there are positive sparks and there are negative sparks. And, you know, the positive sparks are, I'm ready for the next thing. I'm getting bored. I need to be pushed more. I'm ready. I'm really, truly ready to take the next step. Those are all kind of, I'm feeling myself get to complacency, and I know that that's going to make me want to beat my head against the wall. The negative sparks, I think, are more the companies, my company just doesn't get it. I make recommendations and they don't go anywhere. It's a down economy and I didn't get a big pay raise, but I still should have. And I think there's kind of an important level of introspection to say, am I moving on for a reason where it's actually going to move me forward to be in a better spot? And man, I'm hearing myself sound like the generic platitude, but it's just, there's so many frustrations that can happen for analysts and kind of deciding, when are you going to take those frustrations where they are and use them to kind of power yourself forward? I'm going to educate people more. I'm going to find ways to do better analysis versus when do you kind of throw your hands up and say, hopefully it's better at the next place, but I don't really know why it would be. Man, I'll stop there because I feel like that's kind of going nowhere.
No, that's dark. So let's let Jim play a little bit of devil's advocate on some of that then.
Tim, you Maybe ignorant because slut.
Because he always contradicts me and says I'm wrong no matter what I say. The sky is blue.
Tim, you couldn't be more wrong. It's a shade of ochre, sir. You know, I don't have the same, I don't have any anecdotes. I don't have the same level of experience you guys do. I wanted to be an analyst so much I had to start my own company. You know, I mean, I like this work, but I've never been able to do it for anybody else until 6 years ago when I started Napkin. So
how did that actually go? Did you leave the sales job to start Napkin?
No, I was doing analysis to close deals. So I learned how to do it, but as a salesperson, as part of like the solution. And I just really enjoyed it. And I realized that actually it dovetails nicely into the topic. I sat there about 7 years ago and I realized there are tons of companies throwing off terabytes of data and they have great questions and no one answers them. So I actually started Napkin to fill the void left by the hole in the marketplace for talent. So call Napkin today and get 20% off your first purchase. But what's interesting is that, you know, 5-6 years ago, there were guys like us, you know, people who had, we came out of the server room or the sales department or the marketing group. There was a small core of experienced people, and there was a smaller pool of jobs. Like if you go to Dice right now and you look for web analytics or business analysts, it's like 40,000 jobs. You know, I mean, there's way more demand than there is supply. And I think your anecdotes aren't particularly relevant to a lot of the listeners either, because you can be a 22-year-old with yeah, I looked at Google Analytics once and get $80,000. You know, I mean, you don't need a whole lot of experience to put web analyst on your business card and have the recruiters start calling.
Well, I think for a lot of organizations, you know, who's going to call you out on it?
You know? Yeah, because they don't know any better. And the last point I'd make is that, you know, especially in Ottawa, which has a large tech corridor, but mostly development, you know, like Nortel and companies like that that don't exist anymore, but you know, I've seen hardcore recruitment drives on certain types of technologists. So, for example, Shopify is based in Ottawa, and you can literally say, I looked at Ruby on Rails once in grade 8, and they'll hire you. Recruiters will call your mom's house and take you. I've never seen as aggressive a recruitment drive for a non-technologist role as I have seen around business analysts and web analysts in particular. Every analyst I know gets a call a week from a recruiter. And, you know, if you're 23 and if you're starting your career, it's kind of dangerous, if you ask me.
Well, and I think that's actually one of the things that is really important about this conversation, which is it's so easy to run away from something problematic in your current position by just taking one of those phone calls or returning one of those emails. It is not hard to... And, you know, frankly, one a week is lean. That means Canada's not doing so great, I guess. No, I'm just kidding. Like, well, but it's more than that. And the other thing about it is what I've noticed over time is that it allows us to develop a nasty habit, which is to not fix what's wrong in ourselves and always look for the ideal opportunity in the new location, and because of that mobility, we basically don't mature as professionals, or we have the risk of not maturing as professionals. And I think that's something that, like, it should be very concerning to all of us, to anyone practicing analytics today. That should be a very concerning thing. Like, am I giving myself the opportunity to really become a true expert in this space, somebody who really has the bona fides to do this very, very well and at a very high level?
It's funny because there are a couple people, and they're both way younger than I am here in Columbus, but they've both been doing analytics for multiple years, and one of them has taken sort of multiple jobs and has moved every, you know, probably, 9 months to 3 years. And that person is good friends with somebody who has moved once in, I think, 5 or 6 years. And I know, because I've talked to both of them about it, they kind of both point fingers at each other. And the one says, you're going to get labeled as a job hopper. And the other one says, you're not really moving and challenging yourself. You're settling into complacency. And the fact is I think they both have, you know, totally legitimate points. I don't think analysts get labeled as job hoppers. I mean, they may be like, you're a job hopper, but shit, I got 3 analysts I got to hire. You know, I got to take a risk. I got to get somebody in the seat, and maybe this will be the place you stick around.
Right.
To me, there's that sort of spectrum as well, and it's going to be situational based on the role. Like if you're at an agency, you're probably getting more new scenarios thrown at you at a much more rapid pace, because you know, you get a new client and they have a totally different world, you're probably going to be, you know, a little more challenged on an ongoing, there'll be kind of new things coming along.
Sure.
More often.
But then there's the opposite side of that coin, which so rarely happens in the agency setting, which is the depth of analysis and the ability to actually see results flow all the way through the business cycle, which is what an analyst practitioner inside of a company is getting the opportunity to execute against. So,
well, but I think that's where inside the company it can go two ways. You can say I'm getting more senior and deeper, and I'm getting to do deeper analyses, which is fantastic. But there's also the I'm the reporting monkey, and I produce this weekly report and these monthly reports and this quarterly report, and I'm pigeonholed into what I'm doing. And I'm not saying, you know, there's by no means it is one or the other agency or
that,
client side.
That happens on the agency side too, right? Really smart people get stuck producing the same report for 2 years for the same client because that's how they're staffed, right?
Yep. Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
But a lot of times I compare it to this concept of breadth versus depth. You know, on the agency side, you're going to see a large breadth of things. You're going to experience a lot of different looks, right? Like what you said. And I feel like on the practitioner side, if you're able to work in a really any kind of decent analytics department, you're going to get depth of knowledge about the specifics of that business, and you'll have an opportunity to contribute to that business in a meaningful way. There's a lot of reasons why, and actually the reasons why you might move on from either one of those positions, I think actually might be a little different, right? Because why I might leave an agency might be a little different than why I might leave an industry job.
So, we're trying to tease that apart a little bit. And I look at, as somebody who I left an agency job after 3 years at an agency job, and I joined the agency experienced, and I got baptism by fire from when it came to tools and platforms and industry verticals. And I had the opportunity to say, oh yeah, I'm just going to come in and talk to these people about how to do analytics right. And what I didn't realize was kind of how much repeated and painful and laborious education that, you know, here's what it really would be to do analytics right. And that's not a knock on the agency, and it's not entirely a knock on the clients. But after 3 years, I had gotten to the point where I am now repeating the same conversations. I have made a difference, but I am exhausted. And it is time, you know, for me to move on to kind of the next challenge. So,
But the point that you're making that I think is a valid one. I mean, when you're starting.
Wait a
new
minute, hold on. You just said I made a valid point.
I think he was talking about me. I don't know.
Oh,
no, I was looking in a mirror.
Okay.
When you start a new career, period. Like you could be a line cook or a mechanic or working in
a bartender.
Or a bartender.
Or a bartender.
You have to do a lot of shitty work repeatedly for a while before you've learned the fundamentals and you've earned the right to do more interesting things.
It's not shitty work when you're doing it the first time somebody says, tell me how many page views this page got. That's not shitty work the first, second, third, or even tenth time, because it's kind of this magic of I've gotten into this tool and I've answered this question.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know, I cut you off because I was thinking in my mind that's you're going to, at some point it does become shitty work, and maybe that's a trigger.
Yeah, and you need to stick around long enough for you to go, I can do this in the dark with both hands tied behind my back. So either how do I evolve this into something more interesting because I'm evolving, or how do I increase kind of my scope internally? Like my first week on the job, this report took the entire week. Now it takes me 14 minutes. So yeah. What else can I, you know, and that's the thing I worry about with people who are job hoppers in this particular industry, because, you know, you don't learn how to dig trenches, and then all of a sudden you get a job where you get to architect a building. And, you know, I've worked with, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you guys have worked with practitioners before who have a senior role, they talk great, and they don't know shit from shinola because they've never had to do hard work well before. And I think that, you know, a lot of people who do a lot of job hopping in 10 years from now are going to hit a really hard barrier in their career where people go, that person was aggressively overpromoted and they don't have the chops to back it up.
Right. And that's kind of going back to kind of what I said originally, which is, you know, are you at risk of doing that? You know, I think as I'm listening, I'm hearing something and I'm kind of pulling it into a thought, which is I need to, as an analyst coming in, I need to kind of learn the ropes. I need to learn the skills. I need to develop the skill set. And a lot of the basically the fulcrum of how to decide whether or not now is the time for me to kind of go off and do the next thing is whether or not I think I'm ready for what's the next kind of level of or step in my evolution as an analyst, and whether or not my company feels the same way and is giving me those opportunities, right? That's so fundamental, and I think a lot of that comes back down to trust. So often there's a disagreement about what I'm ready to do versus what my company's telling me they think I'm ready to accomplish, right? And then so obviously my response to that is, well, okay, fine. I'm going to go over here and prove you wrong because I know I'm ready. And for lots of people, that works out great. Other people, it doesn't work out so great. The point being, if there's a level of trust, like, okay, you know what? I know you're looking out for me as an employee or as an analyst. I know that you're putting a path in front of me that I believe in. I'll stay here to gain those capabilities on this time frame that you're kind of putting in place. Honestly, I feel like we lack a lot of patience in that capacity to do that, and we lack a lot of trust. And I'm not saying that lack of trust isn't merited. In fact, in a lot of cases, it probably is, because a lot of companies have no idea how to develop an analyst. They have no idea how to give them that next level, how to keep it interesting so that 6 months doesn't turn into 18 months of the same boring routine.
You're kind of being abstract. What when you say, give me – so, I mean, I think the easy one is people say, I'm ready to manage, and we can have a whole little discussion around that. But what other – for an analyst – I'm ready for the next level. A lot of times the analyst doesn't even really know exactly what it's, you know, the next level is not this boring crap I'm doing right now.
No, that's a fair question. So, I mean, just off the top of my head, I can think of, hey, presenting our analysis and findings in front of key stakeholders in the business, right? You're going to let me be the one up front giving the presentation. That's a big responsibility. The weight of the analysis and recommendation is falling on your ability to communicate. So that's a really big, you know, that's a big step potentially for an analyst. So getting that opportunity should be, I would consider that a big step forward in terms of responsibility.
That goes to your protecting, that if you do that prematurely and fall flat on your face, you now have set yourself way back. You're not going to get a second chance. Because of trust.
Credibility once lost is almost never regained in the same organization.
Yep.
Because as an analyst, if the CMO knows that you're kind of a dummy who doesn't know what they're talking about or doesn't understand the business, they're never going to listen to you again. Well, chances are the CMO won't be there by the time you get a chance.
27, 29 months, they're gone.
Yeah, 3 years, whatever it is. And honestly, the tenure for an analyst isn't that long either, right? I've actually heard people say, well, I don't want to leave yet. I want to have at least a year on my resume at this place before I move on. Like, that's 20 years ago. How unheard of would that be? You know,
a quick little tangent, right? When you so what happens when you do lay an egg? And I looked at analysts that I've worked with who kind of did that. They basically didn't necessarily have the communication skills, like that specific example, and maybe they weren't like given the opportunity prematurely. It just happened that they presented. That happened. They rubbed senior people the wrong way, and a year, 18 months later, they still, even though they had professionally developed their skills and their chops dramatically and were actually much, much better analysts and had addressed that, they still cannot overcome that credibility. That's a time to move on. I mean, that takes some level of self-awareness. You know, I did leave one job kind of years ago when I realized that whether or not the people I was working with, the senior people were aware of it, I could kind of see that I had sort of started down the path where they were going to get tired of me being cranky and pissy. And I'd done it enough that I thought, you know what, it's time to move on and get a fresh start. and try to not be as cranky and pissy. I mean, I think what I learned about myself is that I'm going to be cranky and pissy, but I like to think in a, you know, adorable Eeyore grumpy way. But I think that's actually a legitimate reason to move on. If you say, you know what, that person has it out for me for whatever reason. And it, frankly, it may be, I mean, ideally, if you can say it's probably because I didn't handle myself all that well on that one or those two occasions, and I've made the effort to, you know, mend that relationship. But I feel like analysts wind up in that boat a lot. They get frustrated. They know they're saying the right things, but they're not saying what wants to be heard. And if that's not managed well, you can wind up being kind of a little bit of a pariah, and you're just not going to recover from that.
Did you refer to yourself as adorable and Eeyore-like?
And I know this. Now you're going to tell me I'm wrong? Absolutely.
No. Far be it for me to call you wrong on that one.
I've got my tombstone written right there.
So unfortunately, Tim, I've never had the experience of falling flat in an analysis. Ba-doom, boop. Oh, yeah, no, I'm just kidding. No, so I think there is a road to recovery, right? And it has a lot to do with who's around you and how your boss and your department and your team can kind of pick some of that up. Because you inherit credibility also from your group, right? But if you're the only show in town, if you're the single analyst and you basically know the CMO is not giving you the time of day, I once had somebody talking to me about their job and they're like, my boss won't even make eye contact with me. I was like, okay, you need to move on quickly.
I know.
You know, you need to go now. Like, I'm going to give you some names. You're going to call these numbers, and they're going to start helping you with your job search.
You know what I think is interesting is that in way back in episode one, when we were talking about kind of personal development and things that you can be working on, the kinds of skills that we were talking about and the types of assets that you should learn how to produce to be a really good analyst are things that you wouldn't be able to do or pull off in the wrong organization. You know what I mean? So, like, if you're working in a company where you don't have access, we use this phrase a lot at the office, it's called access to power. If you're working in a company and I hear this a lot from kind of single person analysts in enterprises. So how do people ask you for work? Well, people just fire me emails. So regardless of where they sit on the org chart, anybody can ask you a question and it's equally weighted. Yes. Do any of those people have a title above manager? No. Okay, that's a problem, you know. You're not going to be able to. We talked in that first podcast that we did about, you know, executive reporting and storytelling and supporting decisions and you know, sophisticated things. If you're in an organization where anyone can go, hey, how many people bounced on my email's landing page and it's important and I need it yesterday? You either need to learn how to change the culture or you need to find a new culture. If you make a list of things where I want to be someone who can do this, I want to be a data scientist in 5 years, I want to be a CMO in 10 years, and you're not in an organization that will support you in terms of developing those things, find one where you fit. But you know, I do go back to my original point that if you're just doing the hustle for money, and you've got a pretty decent job, but someone will give you an extra $10K and manager in your title, it's going to bite you in the ass.
At some point, but I mean, it's pretty hard to overlook the fact that actually the change in salary, quoting some IQ workforce numbers, you know, is typically, you know, between 18 and 24%, you know, across all levels. And, you know, that's hard to ignore when a lot of times, especially on the industry side, there isn't necessarily the right level or market level compensation happening. Or, and I'll be honest with you, like, this was something that rattled through my head a lot in my earlier years of my career, which was I saw people accelerating their title, their salaries, and those kinds of things faster than I was. And I worried. I worried that I was going to be labeled as some person who was, oh, yeah, they're okay, but they don't have what it takes to kind of do this next level, right? And so breaking through to, like, maybe that manager level title or something like that is legitimately a big concern for people. They really, you know, it's something they want to prove to themselves that they can go out and get, right? And so it's difficult to say to somebody, well, yeah, give it 5 to 7 years. That's the legitimate amount of time you kind of need to, like, learn your craft, get skills, and really kind of become that person. It's hard to have that conversation, but at the same time,
I do agree with you that, you know, done poorly, it can absolutely come back and hurt you. I want to switch gears really quick, and I want to talk about the mission of an analyst in any organization, because I think this goes to the key of or to the heart of the discussion to a certain extent. There's a lot of phrases out there that describe kind of like, hey, I'm a digital analytics person. I consider myself, you know, I remember John Lovett saying, I consider myself a change agent. I want to hear you guys talk about a little bit about that. Like, what does it look like? What is an analyst's place in an organization? What do they exist to accomplish there? Because this goes back to, like, fulfilling the mission, right, of what you're there to do.
Because it depends on the organization, right? Like, there is the high level, I'm here to be a change agent. I'm here to help the business make better decisions and move forward. But the nature of the organization, you know, if you're Dell, they've got crap loads of analysts, and kind of your role within that is a much, much kind of tighter. You may be in a place where you're like, I am trying to help ensure this area of this aspect of the website is performing as great as possible. If you go to a smaller company or maybe a simpler company, you can say, no, I'm here to really affect change and get the organization to think about data differently. I mean, I'm in consulting because of the latter, right? That's what drives me, is because I feel like there are so many organizations doing things wrong that I want to help them think about analytics differently. But in my career, I've been in organizations where I've had managers, and I will say almost all, every time when I would, if I say mentor, it was always a really good manager who got it or got some stuff that I didn't get. And I wasn't tasked directly with being a change agent. I was kind of in the mode of learning from them, what does that mean? How do we actually put the layer of the right questions? How do we ask the question not only to make sure that it's a worthwhile question to answer, but we're also helping them, the people we're asking the question of, think smarter? I'm not sure exactly how that gets us. I don't know how that gets us to when's it time to move on.
Yeah, I know. When I think comparing John Lovett to your average analyst is like comparing a major league ball player to a kid who got a bat at Kmart, you know? Like, he's legitimately a change agent.
That is cold. Like, John Lovett is someone I respect, and for you to compare him to a kid at... Oh, wait.
No, I didn't. No, he's a hitter. He goes into a company and he affects change. I mean, someone who's starting their career and getting calls from recruiters, they're filling out Excel spreadsheets. And frankly, to a large extent, they should be for a little while.
But I think they should still be aspiring to a higher level purpose of sort of, what am I trying to accomplish? It's not, because honestly, at the end of the day, if your goal is to become a manager of analytics or a director of analytics or a chief data officer or whatever the title or monetary level you want compensation at, if that's your goal, honestly, it's a little bit shallow on some levels, and there needs to be more to it than that. Like, for you to be successful, I think you got to bring more passion. And for that, you need more purpose, right? You need to bring kind of like, here's what I'm really in here to do. Because I'll be honest with you, like, when I've considered leaving a company, it's because I've gotten to a point where I think there's not a way for me to achieve the thing I've set out to do at this company, because there are systemic things in this company that actually prohibit me from accomplishing them. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I create a lot of problems for myself and make a ton of mistakes, but this is kind of the way I try to think about it.
You know what I'm thinking of as we're talking through this? Because one other thing that I see in pretty much every measurement organization I've ever talked to, except for Nordstrom's, because they have like 350 analysts, there is way too much work and not enough people in every single measurement team in every single company I've ever talked to. So,
yeah,
you know, if you're sitting there and you think, I'm bored with X and I'm doing my job, like the things that I'm being asked to do, I'm doing them. And I want to learn how to use R and try and answer some hard questions. I want to get much better at understanding our tag manager and Adobe implementation and start to have business use. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much work that's just sitting on the shelf gathering dust that, you know, I think if you're in a place where you're meeting your basic job requirements and you're not being allowed to self-evolve, then that would definitely be a criteria. You know, if you're trying to be a keener and you're being told, no, just wait till the emails come in and do the work in the queue.
At the same time, flip that around, and if you're just sitting there with the business's data right in front of you and you're not coming up with some ideas and pushing them out to your team and your boss and being like, hey, I think there's something cool we could look at here. Can I spend some time looking at this?
We keep dancing around. That's kind of gets to it. I think that your earlier point and then this one is ultimately you want the organization to get smarter and move forward. And there's a point in your career where you kind of need to accept that you don't understand the business or marketing well enough to just kind of single-handedly drive that. So I think we've sort of talked, and Jim, you kind of touched on that. If you first time you logged into Google Analytics was 6 months ago and you've been at this company for 5 months and 29 days because you leveraged that into an analyst job, and damn it, you're not meeting with the CEO once a week and you're frustrated, then you need to get over yourself. But if you look upwards and say, who am I learning from? Who is actually helping me figure out how to do this? Who's helping me learn the business, how analytics can apply to the business? And there's kind of two things that can come back from that. You can say, wow, that person, maybe it's my manager, maybe it's not, really seems to get it. And every time I have a conversation with them, I learn something and I'm a better analyst for it. That's a reason to stick around. If you look around and say, and I've definitely talked to people who've been in this boat, where they say, I'm really good at what I do. I'm highly regarded. I'm well compensated. I have a lot of autonomy, but I don't have anyone internally who is helping me learn and get better. Then yeah, that is a problem. And that goes to, is it time? If we say, when is it time to move on? Well, that may be it's an indication it's time to move on, but you need to be really, really careful that where you move on to, you're not in the same boat 6 months later. You don't want to move into a role necessarily and say, well, now I'm expected to be kind of the expert and do everything. You may still say, well, when I'm interviewing, I want to figure out who are the people that said some really provocative stuff that challenged me that I could learn from, while also I, as an analyst, can bring to that role, you know, some stuff that they don't have.
No, I think that's really good. And I think you just surfaced something I want to switch gears and talk about now, which is the external factors, which is there are more openings for the work than there are people. That's a continuous state. And there are people whose job it is to make you interested in those other opportunities, right? All the recruiters out there, the LinkedIn emails, the phone calls, everything. If you're not prepared for it, it's a very interesting thing. But there's a hidden skill set in there about learning how to evaluate opportunities at companies, job descriptions, like how a recruiter communicates with you could actually be a really important signal in whether or not this is something you should pursue or not. How hard is it for this business to retain the talent? They may be hiring, you know, Nordstrom's may hire 350 analysts. How long are those analysts staying? You know, like, what do you see? Like, do your due diligence. But this is, like, I'd like to hear from you guys, like, how do people get skilled up in that aspect of that of the decision-making process? How do they figure that out?
You know what that actually made me wonder? I wonder if the three of us could put our heads together offline and literally build a checklist, like that you might be a redneck for a job post, you know? Like, this might be a good job if.
Well, you know, if the job post lists out things like, first you'll heat the sand to 1,000 degrees and make it into a glass goblet, then you'll take the glass goblet and serve wine at the dinner table. Then you'll clean up all the dishes and wash the dishes afterwards. Like, if that is all in the one job, then that's probably, that should warn you.
I think that actually is a bartender job.
I was trying to stay, you know, close to the analogy, right? Or, like, you know, when, you know, I've been in interviews where I've asked people, I was like, you know, you put this, and this in your job description. Like, I'm just going to come out and tell you, I don't do those three things. Are you still interested in talking to me? And I've literally had people tell me, yeah, you know, we're just trying to cast a wide net. We're trying to figure out, like, we just want to get somebody good at some of these things that we can figure out. That could be a big warning sign, or it could be okay. Like, you have to kind of evaluate.
You got to probe on that and figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. Because it could be.
Are you saying you're saying I'm going to tell you whatever I want you to hear, whatever you want to hear, and then I'm still going to have that expectation?
Right. And you could be setting yourself up in a terrible way. The other thing is I don't know like what people do in the job market today, but I tend to do as much research as humanly possible. Like, if I'm going to go interview with 5 people at a company, you better believe I'm crawling all over the internet trying to, and hopefully not in a creepy way, but like to get educated about, all right, what are these people? Do I think I could respect them? What do I see about them? And so when I meet them, I can push in and try to figure out some of those things. Because again, the people you work with are super important to whether or not this is going to be a good position for you or not.
What are their credit scores? Where do they live on Google Maps?
I'm not going to comment on whether or not you can find somebody's home address through various means.
It was really awkward that I had never heard of Eric Peterson when I talked to him. It was kind of scrambling on the fly.
Is this in your interview to join Demystified?
To join Demystified. It was very
you hadn't done the research.
Yeah, I had not done the research, and it was I think we already established that Eric does not listen to podcasts, so I am
you're safe. This is
a safe place. safe place.
I like that you made a career limiting move in a career podcast.
There you go.
It's a pro move.
You know, so here's I have to read you guys this one because it is so comical. And I will say, I'm going to name drop another Demystify partner, but Michelle Kiss wrote a post, and lots of posts have kind of hit this. If she was talking about hiring, and I think a lot of posts say don't go for the unicorn. This was for a substantial, well-known kind of household name company. They were looking for a marketing insights and analytics analyst, related work experience, 0 to 2 years. They needed experience in SAS, SPSS, or C++, experience in SQL, experience in multivariate analysis, decision tree, and non-parametric methods, strong project management experience skills, verbal and written communication, experience working cross-functionally in a fast-paced environment. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And they're like, yeah, this is a junior, you know, entry-level position. And they sent it to me saying, can you help us find someone? And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're not going to find that. And if you find somebody who has taken one course in 4 topics and bring them in, like if you're looking for a job, that would scare the crap out of me. And I think your strategy is going in saying, you know what, I'm giving you my resume, but I can't do half of these things. I kick ass on these other 3 or 4, and you can afford me, then you still have to probe pretty hard and not think you're being set up for failure.
Yeah, the other thing is that it probably shouldn't dissuade you from talking to that company if you don't have every single qualification on the list, you know, if you really are seeking a job there.
Well, and let's be fair, a company that writes that kind of job description, you should be able to know going in it is a culturally not ready for an analyst organization.
But there's an opportunity, right?
But
back to the when is it time to move on, and those were the interviews that they were fun. Like I stopped about 5+ years ago, I stopped ever having any stress about a job interview, partly because I knew I was imminently employable. But
yeah, it's a good
those
feeling.
Those are the ones that I'd walk into and say, look, I mean, I would again not be a jackass about it, but you know, I'd say, you know, when they say, oh, what questions do you have for us? Well, guess what? My questions are real. And I think the question of when is it time to move on, how much are you really honest about what you know and can do? Like, you're trying to literally move up to the next level, not 4 levels up, right? You're not, I've been doing this job and working in Site Catalyst for 9 months, and I'm bored and I'm frustrated, so now I'm gunning for a director of analytics job at a Fortune 500 company. There's some level of realism. Like, yes, you want to move yourself into a spot where you're not comfortable, I hope, because that's how you're going to, you know, light a fire under your own tush to try to get better. But I feel like that's more like, what are you moving on to, right? I'm realizing now that this discussion, there's when is it time to move on, and then there's what's the right thing to move on to?
It's the second half of this.
Or when is it time to move up?
We're spending a lot of time talking about what's the right thing to move to, and the fact is it would be fantastic if analysts could actually stay at their current jobs longer. And maybe it's just the circles we move in. I mean, I think half of Jim's analysts are probably, you know, by the math, they're all going to be gone by the, you know, within 2 months. I'm fortunate that I don't have any analysts working for me, so I don't have to worry about anybody getting – you two have to worry about that somebody could listen to this episode who works and throw these words back in your face and say, peace out.
I'm actually in a funny spot. Ottawa is a very funny town in terms of the employment market. so unless you want to work for the federal government, who's not currently hiring right now, you really have to move to Toronto or the States or Vancouver.
Yeah.
And who wouldn't want to live in lovely metropolitan minus 40 degrees Celsius today, Ottawa, right now?
And my hope is that anybody on my team would hear the exact same things from me that they just heard on this podcast in person. You know,
I will stand up and say the same thing. I've honestly told people who were fantastic. I was like, you probably need to move on, and here's the reason, and I'm not going to fire you because you're great, but I understand like kind of where your interests and your talents lie, and the fact is you should probably be gently looking. I've also told people, you know, you burn some bridges, and I've got credibility, and I'll help you out where I can, but I'm not a civil engineer. I can't rebuild that bridge.
Yeah.
You should move on.
So we've poked at this topic a little bit, and I feel like it's a topic that it's hard to really dig in and really find like a kernel of truth or kind of like a really solid kind of thing. But I want us to try to go back as we wrap up and just kind of say like, you know, maybe here's two things or here's one thing to really think about as you kind of approach the process. And maybe it's as you consider the new process, because like you mentioned, Tim, they're part and parcel of the same thing. Honestly, if the opportunity you're evaluating is a terrible opportunity, maybe you need to settle back down and look at how you can maintain and do well in where you're at. You know, so anyways, let me hand it back to you guys and just sort of talk some sort of key takeaways.
Here's my takeaway. Because we have the luxury of the phone ringing, you know, often, I would actually say use that. And one really good way to figure out whether it's time to move on, and I will say the 2 jobs ago when I left, I really spent a year knowing that I was on my way out. And I did kind of the classic, I'm passively searching. I'm being careful about who knows I'm formally looking, but if an opportunity falls in my lap, I'm going to take that. And what that let me do was talk to a handful of companies about their roles. And it let me be kind of introspective about, does this sound like it is a much better place than I am now? So it again gives you that sort of the fun part of interviewing where you say, I don't have any stress. I'm going to be polite and professional. And if this lights a fire under me and I'm super excited, that's going to help me make the decision that it's time to move on. But even if it doesn't, it's going to help me kind of solidify in my mind what it is that is making me even think about moving on. And I can look back to the last, almost every job change I've made, aside from one where I was kind of trying to geographically relocate, where I use that. I kind of talked through multiple opportunities. Some of them I wasn't even offered the position, but they all gave me the opportunity to kind of think about let me analyze, because I'm an analyst, let me analyze what it is that makes me think I might be ready to move on. And in some cases, it was another year before I actually moved on, but I was really confident that what I was moving on to was a move forward.
What about you, Jim?
I was just typing them down so I wouldn't forget them. This has been an interesting podcast. Have you noticed that every podcast we've done so far, we have a clear topic, and then by the time that we're done, we're talking about something totally different, but it's still interesting?
I think it's a feature, not a bug.
So I have 4 takeaways. The first one is, I only...
Oh, sorry.
Hey, so, jumped the gun there. All right.
So the first one is that there's three reasons why someone would leave. I originally only thought there were really two. One of them is that I hate my job, and the other one is I'm mercenary, the market is hot. And the third one that we actually covered more than the other two was the fact that there's so much opportunity and there's so many smart people in our industry that sometimes people just evolve out of their role. You know, it doesn't just need to be money. It can be, you know, value and challenge. The second thing is that I really seem to have a hate on for millennials, because I spent the whole beginning to ranting with, you know, these 22-year-olds asking for more money, wanting to be the vice president.
That's called managing the P&L of two companies, I think, is what it's called.
When I was a lad, we went uphill both ways.
Here at Search Discovery, we welcome millennials.
Here at Napkin, get off my lawn.
That's right.
Damn kids. The third point is that, in the words of the Dalai Lama, with great power comes great responsibility. Or Spider-Man. It's one of the two. And I think that, you know, when you're starting off your career, when I started my career, I had a don't get fired, work as long as you can, and maybe you can be a senior salesperson. Most career paths are like that. Digital analysts have the ability to actually properly chart their own careers. I never had that liberty until I started my own company. You can actually sit there at the beginning of your career and say, in 5 years, I can do this, and take ownership of it. But if you decide to let an extra 5K here and a better title there be the reason you make your decisions, I think you'll come to regret it. But you can really chart your own path and take ownership of it. And then the last thing is that I wonder how many people, if people are still listening to this podcast by this episode, are going to take it and send it to their boss and go, see, I can go anywhere. Listen to those three guys. I want to raise right damn now.
And then I hope their boss doesn't call their bluff. There are people listening to this podcast saying, crap, I'm not actually having, I actually don't have recruiters calling me at this point. Yeah. So,
well, we all just took it at read that any good analyst can pick up and go anywhere. It was just an assumption.
Yeah. So, and so for me, I think, you know, there's a couple things I heard, and that one of the things, it's not simple, and hopefully we're treating it with the respect it deserves, because that decision-making process is very personal and it's very important. But I think because of some of the things you both said, like how mobile people are, how available there are for new opportunities, and how awesome it is to have that control, it actually forces a digital analyst to really have an unprecedented amount of self-awareness and reflection about their motives, what they're really out there to accomplish, and those kinds of things. The other thing is I think you can measure happiness in a job in some cases around impact. You know, what is my impact, or how am I making a difference? And I think sometimes being able to see the difference you're making, even if it's not a big difference, that's a pretty meaningful thing, and you shouldn't give up on it lightly. At the same time, if you can't get any traction, if you can't make a difference, then maybe that's when it's time to start looking at those other options. Again,
you gotta try for a while, right? I think that's where
the caution is, the first sign of adversity, don't bail out and jump to that next company. You know, eventually, like Jim has been saying, that will catch up to you in a harsh way, and at a time when you probably won't like it to happen, right? So, you know, because obviously we want to see digital analysts going from success to more important things and becoming more influential and more important in the context of the marketing organizations and the businesses that they work with. Anyway, so to wrap this up, you know, thanks so much for listening. You know, this topic is quite an interesting one, and one that I think, you know, we feel pretty passionately about here at the Digital Analytics Power Hour. We'd love to hear your comments and questions on our Facebook page. And, you know, if you've got questions that are more personal, like, feel free to reach out to any of the three of us in privately via either Facebook or Twitter and things like that. I think we'd be probably most, I could probably speak for the three of us, that we'd probably be willing to at least have a conversation with you via email or maybe by phone to discuss some of these issues and see if there's some light we can help shed on things.
Absolutely. I will definitely say I've never not responded to an email from somebody asking for, you know, looking for somebody to kick something around on the career development front.
Yeah. And I
guess I'll be nice too.
All right. See, look at that. So obviously, because we're a podcast, we have iTunes, and that's how a lot of people subscribe to our to this show, and we're very thankful for that. We'd love to get your ratings, your comments, anything that iTunes lets you say about us, good, bad, or ugly, preferably the good ones. But it would be great to hear from you and get your feedback on the show in that way too. Thanks again for listening. For Jim Kane, for Tim Wilson, this is Michael Helbling. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook or Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. Facebook.com/analyticshour or @analyticshour on Twitter.